This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Dr. Rebecca, not far enough south, Jimenez, from Macon, Georgia. And you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for December 19th. This is episode 812. This episode is brought to you by Technical Large Animal Emergency Rescue at TLAER.org. Good morning, horse world.
No need to panic, folks. It's Emergency Preparedness Day on Horses in the Morning. That means Dr. G from Technical Large Animal Emergency Rescue is here to enlighten and inform. So put on your emergency gear and mount up.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome back, Dr. G.
Good morning, Glenn.
Thank you so much.
I was serious when I said I wasn't far enough south.
Yeah, it's going to get almost 80 today, I hate to tell you, here in Florida. So.
Yeah, well, I was talking to my friends in Minnesota and Maine, and they're barely breaking zero. So, you know, maybe I am far enough south.
Yeah, I think we can all be appreciative after looking at their temperatures.
Absolutely.
They definitely have it worse than us. Well, we want to welcome you back and, of course, remind people that we do this emergency preparedness episode once a month. The last one was on November the 21st. If you missed that, just head on over to horsesinthemorning.com or on your app. I don't think you can listen to it on your app. I think you get the last 20 on the app. So just head on over to horsesinthemorning.com and take a listen to the last one and all the ones that Dr. G has done. You know, I also wanted to remind everybody just a bit of housekeeping here, Dr. G, that we want to hear from you. We are asking our listeners and friends and everybody we know to leave holiday voicemails to play on the show on Horses in the Morning tomorrow morning, Friday morning. So you have today yet to get your voicemails in. We got a bunch of them calling in already, and we have had several that have been singing us holiday songs, and we encourage that. So if you want to wish your friends and family a happy holidays, or wish your horses a Merry Christmas, or you want to sing us a song, or just be clever and witty, do that by calling our voicemail line at 859-474-0261. We've had a bunch, but we would love to get some more. Well, actually, Jamie and I would like it that we could play the whole hour and a half and just be nothing but voicemails, and then we could just take the morning off. But we need a few more to accomplish that. So get your voicemails in, 859-474-0261. Thank you for letting me do that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we've had some clever songs being sung too. So that's all I'm gonna say. You have to listen in tomorrow morning. Well, Jennifer,
does that have anything to do with the sheath cleaning song?
No, nothing to do with the sheath cleaning song. We've had a couple clever Christmas ones. Nobody's been brave enough to sing the sheath cleaning song for us yet.
Oh, that's a lead in. I bet somebody calls in and does a Christmas version of the sheath cleaning song.
Put it to Jingle Bells or something. Jennifer,
oh my
what's coming
gosh.
Up?
Jennifer, what do we got?
On stage. I'm going to have to put myself on mute the whole show this time. On today's Emergency Preparedness Thursday episode, brought to you by Technical Large Animal Emergency Rescue, Dr. G takes on the role of the ghost of Christmases yet to come. That's right. She dons the costume of the Grim Reaper, and she takes us on the all too realistic tour of what could happen when horses and cold, frozen bodies of water get together. And Dr. G provides some advice on how to keep barn fire from being written on any more headlines. And in the educational second half of the show, we will visit with Ray Polsinski, whose name I apologize for messing up, from the Illinois Fire Service Institute. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
All right, so I have a question.
Wow, I give you an inch and you take 5 miles.
That's what I have a question. If she's the Grim Reaper, the ghost of Christmas in the future, what am I?
You're the one in the middle, but yet the Christmases of now, the one that laughs and eats all the time.
Oh yeah, I like that guy. He gets to eat all the time. I like that. I'll be the ghost of Christmas present.
Yes.
Try.
Well, tell us how much your horse loves going into pools and water.
I did tell that on the air the other day about how my pony loved to just dunk himself in the water and roll around the other day after we had all that rain. It was funny. It was really funny. And this is the pony that won't step over a puddle on the road. So his ticket is up. No more avoiding puddles. I know better now. And speaking of which...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Now we know if he gets loose, he's going to the pool.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's what I wanted to bring up. I did a review of all the headlines for the past month that involved horses doing stupid stuff and needing rescued. And there was a definite trend. Take a listen to the headlines. Horse rescued after jumping into a pool. And this is in Long Island. And I think this is one of the ones that you want to talk about today. Horse rescued from backyard pool in Bohemia. Fergus Falls, Minnesota. Horse rescued after falling into ice-covered spring. Manchester, England. Horse rescued by firefighters after falling in canal. Fremont County. Horse rescued from river. And then another one, stricken horse saved from mud in early morning in Muirhead Rescue. Do you see a trend here?
Yeah, anytime you involve water and the temperatures start dropping. Glenn, actually, you know, from a veterinary perspective, there is some speculation that sometimes these animals end up in these places because they're self-medicating. In other words, their feet get hot, they're pre-laminitic, and they go into things like mud holes and that kind of stuff. But pools... That's sort of hard to – actually, you know what? I have a real good challenge for our listeners. If anybody can get me a video of a horse going into a pool, I would love to have it. I might even take that person to dinner because all my videos and pictures of horses being pulled out of the pools. So how do they actually get in? We really don't know. But we speculate it has something to do with – running through the backyard, the gate is open, and for whatever reason, they end up in the pool. Or do they look into the pool and see their reflection and just get really interested and then fall in? Are they running around the edge of the pool like you did when you were a kid and your mom said, don't run because you'll end up falling and busting your butt? And then they slip and fall in the pool. Who knows? I want a video. I do not have a single video of that.
And most of the time, when we see them this time of year, the pools are covered. And I think the horses think because those covers are very tight. They're stretched very tight. So it looks like a solid surface. It just looks like ground, and they go step on it and fall in the pool. But why isn't there a fence around the pool? Most places require, by law, you have to have a fence around your pool.
I think that goes back to what we usually talk about in large animal rescue. It's not always the horse. Usually it's the people that are somehow directly or indirectly involved and leaving the gate open. The kids, you know, forget and leave the gate open, or we get busy, or the gate gets broke, the latch gets broke, and we just don't get around to fixing it. I don't know, Glenn. There's so many times, and, you know, this happens with kids, too. I attended a funeral a couple of years ago for a 4-year-old boy that went in the pool this time of year, and that was horrific. You know, it just takes 10 minutes of not knowing where your kids are, and there's some tragedy. Anyway, it happens to horses, too. It is not uncommon for people to take those pool covers off in the spring and find dead dogs, dead groundhogs, dead horses. There was a guy in Georgia a few years ago that had a bison in his pool. How does a bison get in your pool? I want to know.
And if the bison falls in the pool, doesn't all the water in the entire pool splash out?
But from the picture, there was still water in the pool, but I'm not sure really you could call it water. It looked a little brown. Looked like it had been well mixed. So looked like...
Well, he had a dirty bison in the pool. That's going to cloud your water, too.
He did have a dirty bison. They managed to get him out, but apparently he didn't survive, and he actually died of hypothermia and stress. So that's, unfortunately, what gets a lot of them. So, you know, it's not like you have an alarm in your pool that goes off when something falls into it. So it all comes down to luck of the draw when you find the animal in the pool.
Now, this one in Long Island, I want to talk about this one a little bit, because there was a ton of articles written on it, and you posted it on our Horses in the Morning page, Facebook page this morning, a link to one of the articles about it. So tell us about, you know, as you said on your post here that although it's a successful rescue is never stupid is what you said. And they had a successful rescue. This horse, it was a covered pool. And the horse stepped, you know, on the cover and fell in the pool. Again, I don't know why there wasn't a fence. But so what happened then? How did they rescue him? And what should they have done?
Well, in the end, they were able to use some straps. They were able to get the pool cover off the horse. They led him to the shallow end. Those are all good things. The placement of the straps could have been a little bit better. I prefer a forward assist or a sideways drag. They could have had less people in some of the videos that go with this are sort of challenging because people in the videos you can see are in the wrong places. There are multiple people pulling on the horse's head, which, you know, if I pulled on your head, Glenn, you wouldn't like it. Horses don't like it either. And all you do when you pull on his head is you make him fight you. And then the worst part is they used hay bales down in the water to try to get the horse out. And they didn't drain the pool. I'm a big fan of drain the pool, give yourself some time. That takes away the water, and it's, you know, the problem with the pool is drowning. So we don't want anything to drown. So, you know, the fire department, I don't know if you know this, but you want to talk about a pump, Glenn. Fire departments can drain a pool in less than 2 minutes.
I was going to say, if I had to drain our pool using our drain, you know, the normal way
it'd
we
take
would,
forever.
It would take 4 hours, yeah.
Yeah, but it doesn't take you 4 hours when you pull in the fire department. They have a 1,200 gallon per minute pump. They have a couple of them, and they can drain that pool very quickly down to a, you know, that takes away your chance of hypothermia. It takes away your chance of somebody drowning, the animal drowning, those kind of things. So that's one thing I would have tried to do. Cutting away the pool cover was a good thing. But then the other challenge is using hay bales to get the horse to walk out of the pool. You have 1,000 pounds. This looks like maybe a 900 pound horse, 800 to 1,000 pounds. He's sort of smallish. He's a little bit bigger than your pony, but smaller than mine. The problem is, Glenn, it comes down to surface area. Do you remember that part from physics? Oh, you didn't want me to turn this into physics this morning, did you?
No, not really.
Okay.
I'm not sure I passed physics.
It comes down to surface area. Think about it, Glenn. If you go out and stand next to your horse, and you look at the size of your footprint and the size of your horse's footprint, I bet you can fit 4 of your horse's footprints in your 2 feet footprints. Would you agree?
Yep.
Only your horse is a lot heavier than you are. So you've got a lot of weight on a very small...
Oh, now I get it. Now I get it. He's going to step down through the hay bale and get it stuck on his foot like a big clod of mud. I get it now.
Exactly right. And what does he do when he gets his foot stuck in a clod of mud, or worse, gets the hay strings wrapped around his leg? He's going to fight you. He's going to jerk and pull his feet back and this kind of thing. So it all has to do with surface area. I'm not really a big fan of using hay bales for that. Now, I am a big fan of using the hay bale to feed the horse while you're waiting for help, because horses... As you know, Glenn, they don't understand that, oh, my God, I'm in a life-threatening situation. Oh, my God, get me out of here. Call my mama. They don't do that. They go, oh, look, there's some alfalfa hay. So that does a couple things. What happens when a horse is eating? He's calm, right? And not only that, you're also restarting up his metabolic fires inside of his body, which provides heat to the horse so that he's going to get over his hypothermia quicker and all those good things. So that's, you know, like you said, it's never stupid if it's successful. But if you also look at the picture when they actually got the horse out, when a horse goes to get up, he doesn't realize that the hole of the pool is still right behind him. And if he struggles too hard, especially on a flat surface, like the edge of the pool, he can literally slip right back in the pool. It has happened before. So, you know, again, it's just little nitpicky things that I see when I look at these kind of things, and I try to make them as educational as possible because we can all learn from something. And there's one last thing that I have a comment for, and one of my assistant instructors mentioned it when we were talking about it. And she said, did you see the dogs in the video? And I hadn't really been paying attention, but when I went back and looked at the video associated with this, there's dogs everywhere. There's dogs everywhere. Do you really need the dogs? No, you don't need the dogs. It's dangerous to people. It's dangerous to the dogs, and it's obviously dangerous to the horse. And if the dogs scare the horse at just the wrong time, it can end up right back in the pool. So
probably the dogs that chase the horse into the pool.
Yeah. You know what? You know, something I thought of, and this happens to us constantly. You're busily doing something. The dog is behind you. You don't know it. You take a half a step back.
Yep.
And you know, someone's going to land in the pool having tripped over the dog, land on the concrete and bonk their head having tripped over the dog. Yeah, put the dog somewhere else. Yeah, put him in the pickup truck with the heat on. That's good.
And that's why I encourage people to look at these things in a little bit different manner. And actually, in the technical large animal emergency rescue trainings that I provide all over the country, that's what we emphasize, is take a look at the situation, step back a little bit, and try to understand how that could happen to you. How could you do it a little bit better? Is there any preparation? And obviously, Glenn already pointed out, the biggest preparation is close the fence so that the animal can't get there in the first place.
Right, yeah.
Although there have been a couple of these kind of things, Glenn, where there was some teenagers involved. And I'm betting that the parents were not around when the teenagers got involved with this kind of thing. But anyway, you know how those things are. So we're actually going to talk a little bit more about ice fall throughs when Eric Thompson from Kansas gets on a little bit later in the show. But I just wanted to hit on that. You know, that's a simple prevention thing. And as in the summer, it might be funny, but this time of year, animals can get hypothermic and die within hours of landing in a pool.
Well, one of the other things that I saw, of course, this time of year, you see it a lot. And when I did my search for what happened over the last month since we talked to you last, the other thing, unfortunately, that happens this time of year is barn fires. And boy, there were pages of notices of barn fires, just pages of them in 1 month. Just amazing.
And a lot of that has to do with people, particularly in places that are not far enough south, where where people are trying to heat water for their animals, trying to provide, you know, clean water. We all know that horses will colic if they don't have water to drink. So they're trying to provide water. And in areas where, you know, it's only getting up to 18 degrees for the high for the day, never getting above freezing, obviously that's a huge concern. You guys used to live in Pennsylvania. You know what it's like.
Yeah, and you know, I also wondered how many of those bucket heaters, especially the ones that are just a coil, I often wondered how many of those cause fires.
Yeah, the bucket heaters cause fires, but another thing that causes fires is a common way for people to try to break the ice in a pipe is to turn on some kind of a heater. Either they have the coil tape that goes around the pipe. All those things are electrical appliances. But one just 2 days ago that happened, it was a horse and cattle barn. And unfortunately, the guy was trying to do the right thing. He was trying to warm up the water for the horses. And he was using some kind of a torch, which never sounds good around a barn.
Whee!
And of course, some hay got on fire. And literally, the place burned down before the firefighters got there. He was able to lead a couple of the horses to safety. But the rest of the facility was lost and a bunch of the cows were lost.
Boy, don't take your propane torch and use it in the barn. It's just not a good idea.
I know. You know, Glenn, really, a lot of this has to do with, in the horse business, there are ways to get around some of these things. And particularly once the fire starts in your barn, there are ways to suppress it. And that's called a sprinkler system. And I know all of you that live, that are listening, that live north of the Mason-Dixon line or the freeze line is what I call it, are thinking, well, there's no way you could have a sprinkler system up here. It's too cold. Well, I will tell you that if you talk to a contractor that does it for a living, they put sprinkler systems in unheated facilities all over the world. And they do work. They are a little bit more expensive, but unfortunately, when you talk to people that have watched their barn burn to the ground or heard their horses when it gets really quiet in the barn, as it burns the ground, they'll tell you it wouldn't have mattered how much it cost. They would have paid it to try to prevent the situation that they end up in, those kinds of tragedies. And actually, I hate to be the Grim Reaper, as Jennifer said, but this month, in December 14th, up in Sand Lake, New York, we always tell people, don't go back into burning barns to try to rescue your horses. And unfortunately, a grandfather up there, his name is Keith Meiser, Sr., he was 60 years old, and he was trying to do the right thing when their barn caught on fire, and his family's horses were in it, and he ran in and managed to get, I think, four of his horses out. There's still a couple more in there, and unfortunately, he died going back into the barn trying to save the horses. And that's the kind of thing we just, that's a huge tragedy that we are always trying to prevent, trying to keep people from going back down in there. And a lot of that has to do with design of our facilities. It has to do with having a good sensing system, in other words, a detector that can sense that there's a fire occurring in the facility and call out responders earlier than waiting till it's, you know, actually burning. You always want to try to catch it at the smolder stage. And then, of course, having a suppression system. And then also, when we look at design and management of our facilities, you know, what kind of obstacles do we place in our own way? Doesn't it make more sense to have stall doors on the outside of your facility, on the outside of your barn? It's been proven time and time again that if you can get to the animals from the outside of the barn, you are going to be safer. The animals are going to be safer. They're easier to remove than if you only have a stall door to the inside. So, unfortunately,
boy, it's hard, though. Dr. G,
it's hard.
I mean, you're in a situation, you see your barn burning, your first reaction is to try and save the horses. Yeah. That's just your guts telling you to go save the horses. You know, whether that's the right answer or not, and you know, obviously, in most cases, it's not. But, boy, that's what your gut is telling you, isn't it?
It's, unfortunately, that's what's happening. And now, of course, his family is left. They still lost their barn. They lost a couple of their horses, and now they've lost their grandfather. So just try to do the prevention side. Try to look around at your facility. Call your local fire department. Have them come out and look at your facility. They will give you some positive things that you can do at your facility to make it look better from the perspective of fire and how to respond to fire. They may look at your fire extinguishers and say, hey, you need some better fire extinguishers here. They may say, hey, your electrical looks like crap. You need to hire a electrician to come in and fix your electrical.
I think that is the biggest one in these old barns, especially is the electrical's joke. It's the old electrical. It's not grounded. It's got the old wires that are exposed.
And what people don't realize,
it's got appliances plugged in that are not designed for outdoor use.
That's exactly right. And too many of them. And the problem is that people don't realize that there's no code. There's no code for many of those agricultural facilities because they are considered to be agricultural, so they don't fall into a code that anybody really worries about. So nobody's checking to make sure that your electrical's good. And so if that's my learning point for today, is call your local fire department or call an electrician out to your facility, have them look at your barn, and make the corrections that you can make while it's going to cost you a couple $100 instead of costing your entire facility and possibly even your animals.
That's one advantage to the
barn. I'll stop in the angel of death.
The one advantage to the barns down here is that they tend to be all the open sort of format and have most of them have the doors to the outside. So, you have the, because they're built for airflow. So you tend to have the ones that are not all enclosed like they are in the Northeast. I saw pictures of that fire up there in New York that you were talking about. New York, right? Yeah. And this guy was a local auctioneer, apparently very well known guy, very well liked. But the fire was massive. They had 14 fire departments, and this thing, there was nothing left of this barn when they were done. Nothing.
When you look at the actual time course of how fires burn, one of the things that we've learned in National Fire Protection Association, there actually is a standard out there, a recommendation to people in the United States on how they should build their facilities thinking about fire. It's called NFPA 150. If you Google NFPA 150, the standard on housing facilities for animals, you can find it, and you can provide it to your local electrician and say, hey, this is what it's supposed to be. But they make recommendations like, you know, that you, common sense things, your hay and your shaving should be separate from the facility, that you should have your diesel tractors and gasoline vehicles, et cetera, at least 50 feet away, and those kind of things. Of course, I know people that live in those areas would probably die in a blizzard trying to get back and forth between the hay barn and the horse barn if they actually did those kind of things. But there are still some considerations for compartmentalization and how you can address those concerns, because everybody always gives me all these excuses, and I say, well, actually, there's ways to get around every bit of that. But we're so hidebound in tradition on how we want our barns to look and how we expect them to run that we don't think about things like you said, even ventilation. Many barns will smolder. They've shown that many barns have smoldered for hours, and the animals actually died of smoke inhalation long before a flame actually broke out. And like you said, once you get 14 fire departments there, all they're trying to do is put water on the barn and trying to prevent other structures from catching on fire. There's nothing they can do. Everything's already gone.
Well, we almost had a fire in one of our bank barns in Pennsylvania. It was from the smoldering hay. It was wet hay that got put up.
Yep.
We put up almost a whole barn full of hay. And, you know, we didn't have the luxury at that time of having the hay separate from the barn where the horses were. We didn't have two barns. So, and we would bring in tractor-trailer truckloads of hay out of the field. So, you know, we filled the barn pretty much. But I'll tell you what, that's one of the things that came up in the show the other day. If you can afford and you can have a separate hay barn from the horse barn, that is so important, because that is the cause of a ton of fires, too, is the combustion of the hay.
Exactly. And it can be smoldering there for a long time before it actually, sometimes days or weeks.
That's how we caught it. It was smoldering. Yep. That's how we caught it. We're able to get the wet bales out of the bottom. Of course, the wet bales that are causing the problems are always in the bottom of the pile, too.
Of course.
They're never at the very top where you can just take it off, throw it outside, open it up, and let it, you know, go out. No. You have to get about 50 bales off the top of it first. Always works that way.
The last thing that I saw this month in the headlines that I wanted to mention real quick is there was a really awful thing. These people had an accident on the interstate. This was out somewhere in the ice-covered areas of out west. They had an accident with their horses on a trailer, and they removed the horses off the trailer, and somehow the horses got loose, started running down the road, and four of them got hit by a tractor-trailer.
Ooh.
So it was already bad enough that they had an accident. Now the animals got loose, and we, you know, try to encourage people, please don't remove your horses off of the trailer unless you've got a better plan. They're going straight onto another trailer. You're going to cut the fence on the interstate and walk them into somebody's backyard, something other than standing on the side of the interstate. Although this month, when I was doing a training, picked up some of my assistant instructors from the Atlanta airport early in the month, and we were driving back towards my house, and there was an actual live incident with a bunch of horses on the side of the road on I-75 going south of Atlanta. And although those horses were beyond the point of caring, they were injured, scared, and it was raining. And those horses were polo horses that are used to being tied to trees. They, by the time we got to the incident, they had been actually tied to the trees, and they were standing there, and people were feeding them hay, and they were perfectly happy. But in many situations, just don't pull those horses off that trailer. You know,
how ironic is you and a bunch of your fellow rescue buddies end up in an accident with a horse trailer?
This has happened two times to me in the last year. Two times. All the years that I've put into running up and down the roads in vehicles, and I haven't come up on a live accident. And two times on I-75 south of Atlanta, in two times in the last year, I've been on a live accident scene. But you know what that really means? It means I go to the airport too much.
Yeah. Stay off of I-75 is what it means.
Yeah.
That's exactly what that means. Well, you know, one of the things, too, you know, I've seen a bunch of reports. You see these all year long. It's not just a winter thing, but of horses getting out, you know, and ending up on the roads and getting hit by cars. Or there's that zebra. I wonder if that zebra is still loose down there. Was it in Tennessee? Remember? Did you hear about that?
I saw that. I saw that. I was like, are you serious?
He's still loose for months. I mean, he's been 3 months on the loose, and they still haven't caught him. And I'm just looking up, as of 5 days ago, he's still on the loose in Cleveland, Tennessee. So they have not caught him yet. But, you know, these horses get loose, and I have to admit that, you know, we had a big farm. It was about 100 acres, and it was a big farm, and we had hot wire, and because we couldn't afford to put fencing on 100 acres. It was just an economic thing. And the one thing that caused the problem was not the horses, it was the deer. The deer would crash the electric fence, and the horses would walk out and end up at the neighbor's house. So, you know, it was the deer that were causing the trouble, not the horses. The horses very seldom ran through the fence, but the deer would help them out. You know, it's like they had a conspiracy going there. So that, you know, that is a big concern. A lot of people use electric fence, and usually it's not the horses causing the problem with the electric fence.
You know, exactly. Actually, when I was at my father's in Tennessee this week, he's not in Cleveland, Tennessee, by the way.
Did you see any zebras?
No, I did not see any zebras. But when I was at my father's, we were looking at some fence as we were driving around because some of the electric fence, he's got cattle, and some of his fences had gotten blown out by, it looked like a storm had come through, only it was between the gaps. And so what had happened is, normally when they're not using those pastures, they have the gate open, and they use a barbed wire gap when it is closed. And apparently what had happened was a herd of deer had come running through in the dark and just hit the fence, and they just blew it out. I couldn't believe it. They must have really hit that fence really hard. So, again, you know, what do we say with fences? If you're going to have fences, you should. There's two games to fences. The animals should be able to see it, and they should not want to get anywhere near it. So the combination of something that they can see, like a white tape or a board or something that they can actually physically see, and then, of course, electric is beautiful because once they touch it once, they don't ever want to touch it again. And I don't ever want to touch it again.
Our dog actually got more deer. We hunted for a couple of years when we had the big farm, and our dog actually got more deer than we did because he'd run them through the fences. That dog figured out that he could run the deer through the fences and get them caught up in it. And then, so we had a very good hunting dog. Was not really a hunting dog, but loved chasing down deer. And, you know, at that point, after they had crashed our fence so many times and our horses ended up at the neighbors, we were kind of happy the dog was on deer patrol, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, on that happy topic there about Grim Reaper, why don't you talk about one of the things that they use to rescue horses, and that is the water rescue harness from Hest.
Absolutely. Today's show is also brought to you with the support of Hest. HAST, they're the exclusive manufacturer of the Becker sling and the water rescue harness. We actually use these slings for short-term lift of lots of situations, from getting horses out of pools. and also, of course, Dr. Becker also makes the webbing that we use for forward assist, backwards drag, sideways drags, Hampshire slips. There's all these different contortions of animals we call manipulations that you can use, and we use all of her kinds of stuff. It's obviously used widely by fire departments, rescue squads, and animal response teams all over the world, and particularly in the United States, and she ships everywhere. So this is also, she features a water rescue harness that's intended for disaster scenarios. For the onesie horses that are trapped in floodwaters that just need a little bit of support to swim, because, you know, you can only swim so far. If you're a fat quarter horse that's not been working out very much, trying to get you to swim a mile is a little bit difficult. Anyway, so she manufactures some custom webbing for a wide range of uses, and veterinary hospitals, rescue agencies, and obviously rescue folks use it all the time. I use her webbing in my demonstrations and live rescues. She's the only person that I know of that actually uses an Instron to verify the worthiness of her equipment. So you can use a toe strap, but I'm just telling you, I like to use something that's been certified. So you can get a hold of Dr. Kathleen Becker at rescue.hastpsc.com, or you can Google for Hest Rescue Harness, or you can call her at 518-302-0784.
Very good. Thank you, Dr. G. And your first guest is ready for you.
Awesome. Well, a couple of months ago, Glenn, you probably remember, we talked to Dr. Deke Carls up in Illinois, another one of those cold countries, not far enough south. Anyway, he was talking about trying to pull the veterinary knowledge together with being a fireman to perform rescues. And he has actually been working with a gentleman named Ray Palsinski, who is at the Illinois Fire Institute. And they have brought to fruition the very first curriculum for a mobile training team to try to get some awareness level TLR information out to firefighters actually in the field. Because as you're starting to realize, as we've been doing the show this last 6 months, Glenn, it's getting the information down to the individual firefighters. And as you can imagine, most firefighters around the world are volunteers, and they have their normal life, and trying to get the information out to them is a big challenge. So let's talk to Ray Palsinski this morning. Ray, are you on?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Good morning. Can you go into a little bit more detail? I'm doing great. Can you go a little bit more into detail about what you guys are doing with your TLR-related programs for Illinois?
Well, I think you gave us a great introduction. And the way our program works is, in the state of Illinois, we have a program called Cornerstone. It's a state pot of money that's given to the Illinois Fire Service Institute to provide baseline training for the firefighters all around the state. The beauty part of this program is it allows us to take the classes to the department. So us being located in Champaign, which is in the middle of the state, doesn't do people that are 4 or 5 hours away much good. What we can do is turn around and put an instructor in their car who's been trained and send them out to those locations and let them teach the class on a drill night so that we can touch more students with them having to spend a lot less time and effort to get the education. And our large animal rescue awareness program is being run through that program. And so far, we're off to a good start.
That's awesome. How many of these pilots have you run?
We've done three in the month of November, which is our inauguration month, and we have three lined up for January. And through the process of these classes, I'm also pulling in the instructors that have either an interest or experience in the area of anything having to do with animals, and kind of using them as train-the-trainers for them, so that as the requests start to come in, we don't have pockets of the state that we can't get to. So these first few classes have been kind of dual purpose, but the response has been pretty awesome, and the discussions from the responders have been really, really cool, I have to say that.
That's awesome. Well, that's the whole intent, isn't it, to get the information down to those guys? And if you've got, you know, our very first, I have to say that our very first Einstein moment many years ago, Tomas and I were providing some of these kinds of trainings, and we had a guy come up to us that was a firefighter. And we'd been working with veterinarians and vet techs and horse people. And the firefighter just looked at us and said, duh. He said, you know, you need to reach out to the firefighters. We're the ones that get the 911 calls for all these crazy things with horses and cattle. We're the one that needs the information. And that's sort of where our training started going, was going towards working with the fire service, working with emergency responders that were doing these kinds of things all day. What kind of events have you guys had in Illinois that really, how did you guys get interested in doing this? I mean, obviously this sounds like a lot of work.
Well, a lot of folks, when they think of the state of Illinois, also maybe think of the state of Chicago and forget about the rest of the state. agriculture is a pretty big part of the state of Illinois. And if you really start to look at it, like we did, we started to learn that when you get out of Cook County, which is where Chicago is located, there are animals just pretty much everywhere. So we kind of surveyed our departments and found out, yep, we were in the right ballpark, we were on the right track, and they all had a genuine interest in learning more. Nobody wants to become a vet per se, but they would like to do a better job when they do deal with animals, and I think this class is going to help them do just that.
They don't want to end up on Rebecca's show having somebody say, well, that was okay, but it could have been better.
Well, it's kind of interesting. We've also, the group of us that have been working to put this together and get it out are diverse. We have our veterinarian, as you mentioned, in Deet. We have a gentleman down south that's a cattleman, and a guy up north that's a horse guy. So with all of these different disciplines represented, we've also made a pretty good touch with our veterinary community in the state. And to give you an example of how this has worked in a way we didn't even expect, last week up in one of our northwestern counties where one of my co-instructors lives, a horse got stuck in a ditch. And right away, they called the fire department, actually. Well, the vet showed up. Well, this vet happens to be my horseman's vet, and he said, hey, where's Chuck and Ray? Why can't they come and help us do this? And this particular little fire department didn't have our class and didn't know about it yet. So when they got done doing what they did, which ended up happy, the vet said to the fire department, call the Fire Service Institute and get this class. You need to do a better job.
Awesome! That's what's supposed to happen!
So, yeah, it came in a different direction than what normally happens, but it worked.
Was that because you were down here in Georgia and it wasn't quite... Ray just got back from doing my operations class down here in Georgia and it was a lot warmer. We got a weather report every day that it was like 60 or 70 degrees warmer than it was in Illinois and Minnesota.
Yeah, that was a very nice trip. In fact, we're in a heat wave now. We're almost to freezing today.
Woohoo! Oh, Lord. Has anybody in Illinois started tracking some of these kinds of things? I know that the fire service has some databases and those kinds of things through INSFER or something like that, INFERS. But do you guys pull that kind of information and try to separate it out for, you know, specifically for animal things?
It turns out that, yes, our state fire marshal's office is the clearinghouse for that information. And when I broached the idea to the deputy fire marshal, he was actually already familiar with it. And he said, you know what, if we don't have it pulled out readily, maybe we need to look into that. So it's a discussion that's in the works. And that just kind of helps magnify the interest. And that's what we're trying to do. We're not trying to make everybody animal handlers or vet techs or any of that kind of stuff, but we sure don't want to see things that don't have to go bad. And just from the first few months of word of mouth, I think we're moving in the right direction.
That is awesome. Glenn, I've been so proud of these guys. I first talked to Ray maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and he was talking about what they wanted to do, and they have just picked up and absolutely run with it, and I'm just so excited to see their support through their organizations, both the fire service side as well as the Institute itself. And tell us a little bit about the Institute, because when I first found out about the Institute, I was pretty impressed.
Well, in Illinois, we are the statutory state fire academy. We do have a campus associated with the University of Illinois in Champaign. It's a 27-acre training site where we do pretty much everything that's hands-on related to the fire service, from structural collapse to firefighting to trench rescue. But the Cornerstone program is this program that delivers baseline training out to the fire departments, regardless of size, all around the state. So that's the mechanism we're working the animal classes through. And it's a fun place to work. Everybody that's in the field either is or was an active firefighter. So the buy-in is there when we show up in communities. We're not complete, total strangers. It's a pretty neat place to work.
How have the firefighters taken to, do they want to learn this stuff, or is it like, just another training?
Well, it's interesting because this is such an off-the-wall topic for them. I'll be honest, the defenses are a little bit up in the beginning of the class. But when they get to those sticky spots or questions, some of the discussions have been pretty lively and pretty interesting. But at the end, they're like, okay, that's good. I didn't know that. I'll buy that. It's almost like taking cough medicine. It doesn't taste good, but you know it's going to do you some good. So at the end, we're okay.
You know, I think too, is what we talked about earlier, Rebecca, in the dangerous situation with that pool. I think a lot of people don't realize how dangerous horses really are. So they don't have that innate concern of being back at the back feet. They don't realize they can get kicked. They just don't know what they don't know. So they think, well, you know, it's a dog. And I think that's where, you know, a lot of them get themselves into trouble is thinking that it's a dog. Have you found that? Is that true? Or are people more scared of horses than I think they are?
I think you're 100% right, because that's exactly what happened last week up in the northwest part of the state. The vet talked to us and he said these guys had no idea what bad spots they were in. They weren't being malicious or bad or anything. They just had no clue that they shouldn't be standing behind the horse. After visiting Rebecca's place, I know where I shouldn't stand.
Yeah. Since I'm the death doctor anyway, I actually have a girlfriend in Greenville Memorial Hospital right now who was kicked 3 days ago by her own horse. She works at a large facility. And it didn't happen at work. It happened at home with her own horse. But they found the horse with his halter and lead rope on, and her daughters actually performed CPR and life flighted her to the hospital. And she is in ICU at this time with a brain injury. And she has been doing this for all of her life. And she still ended up getting something horrific happening to her. So we've been praying for her every single day. And but it just highlights again, you know, even those of us that do know how dangerous it is, we can still get hurt. And I've never met anybody that has horses that's never gotten hurt. And we certainly don't want our emergency responders to get hurt trying to help us help an animal, because they're trained their whole lives that a person is more important than property. And unfortunately, for the people that think that way, horse is property. So it's second-class citizen. And it's about you and your team and your safety before it is about the victim, because it's an animal. So if we can help and we can figure out a way to help safely, we want to do those things. But otherwise, honestly, if the horse is in that bad a situation that somebody's going to get injured to do it, I recommend that people do not do it. And that's why I bring up the example of the barn fires. You don't go into a barn to save a horse that's dying in a barn. What are you saving it for?
See, what do you guys, speaking of which, do you touch on that at all? Do you touch on the fires with horses involved?
We did include a chapter in our class about that. And your conversation here just reminded me to kind of share something. In the fire service, we kind of step off our training to awareness, operations, and technician level, and each builds on the other. Where we are right now is in the awareness phase of it, and I have a feeling that we're going to build one heck of a good foundation with this, because the light bulbs that go off over people's heads when you share with them basic information. One of the things I remember you told us, Rebecca, in the first class I ever went to with you that's burned onto my hard drive is get a large animal vet in your call book. And most of these chiefs are like, man, I've got tow truck guys, I've got dump truck guys, I've got all these people, but what do you mean put a vet in there? And by the end of the class, they're looking through the phone book to find the vet.
That's a really good point. That is a really good point, burned on my hard drive. I like that.
Well, it's,
you're right. And
that on my Andrew Griffith trivia, they're there forever.
And but that also brings up something else that Ray has brought to my mind, which is, when you're on those kind of scenes, it's the tow truck driver. He responds on the interstate all the time. He's used to working with, that's what he does every day. He works with emergency responders, whether they're cops or firefighters. He's used to doing those kind of things. How often does a veterinarian actually get a chance to work with firefighters and emergency responders? They don't. It's very rare, maybe a couple times in their entire career. And so we're trying to, this course is also trying to bring together a better handshake of those people with the emergency responders, so that it's not so scary when they show up on scene. They know who to ask for. They know to report to the incident commander. They know that they're not the incident commander, that they are part of the team. And so trying to get both sides to realize they're part of the on scene, you know, basically it's a game. Which part of the game are we playing? And preferably a safe game.
You make a very good point, Rebecca. And one of the things that I shared when I spoke to the group of veterinarians in November was make an effort to get that relationship started before the accident. Because I can guarantee you, your experience approaching a fire chief in the middle of something that he's never done before isn't going to be pleasant. You're going to walk away thinking they're not nice guys, and that's not the case. They're overwhelmed. But if they know who you are before the bad thing takes place, they're going to welcome you in, and they're going to let you do your thing, and it's going to be a happy ending. And the way I brought them into that conversation was sort of silly, but I said, I would imagine you all live somewhere, don't you? And they kind of looked at me like, well, you have a hole in your head. But I said, no, you have a fire department, don't you? You have to know some firemen somewhere. Everybody knows a fireman. And from there, they got it. It's like, okie doke, got the message.
That's exactly right. And Glenn, one of the, you know, as we're talking about this huge success story that's going on in Illinois, I got a chance to go up to Illinois and speak to the equine practitioners this year. There was about 40 of them, and I was coming at them from the other side. Hey, you need to be calling your local fire department. You need to, you know, who is your local fire chief? Make those connections ahead of time, and gave them some of the reasons why they needed to do that, including some of the very basic information, which is even more basic than what Ray's talking about, which is some FEMA training that's even available online. It's called your Incident Command System courses. There's ICS 100. There's the NIMS, which is the National Incident Management System courses. They're free. They're online. You get a certificate from it. And getting other bystanders, horse people that may be even listening to this show that want to get involved in disaster response, or they want to be smarter when they're on an emergency scene, they can literally go to the FEMA website and learn how to do Incident Command System 100. It's the very basic. And then, of course, while you're on that website, there's also three courses that are specifically made for animals. Animals in communities, animal disasters in communities, and livestock in disasters, which are 3 one-hour courses that give you the basics for how you're supposed to fit into the network, the incident command structure, which is going to be what's going to happen on the scene. The fire chief is going to be there. There's going to be other emergency responders there, and they know how to plug in. So the better we can plug in, either as a horse owner or a veterinarian or a bystander, it makes life so much easier. For example, the wreck that I told you I stopped at I-75 South right before the class, I was picking up my assistant instructors. We whipped off to the side when we realized there was a horse transport involved, and I looked around and I said, "Where's the incident commander?" to the first cop I saw, and he said, "It's that guy." And I walked up, and I sent my guys out to go check on the horses. I talked to him, told him who I was, what I was doing, and he basically was like, "Is there anything else we need to do?" So I'm a stranger that just walked up on his scene, but because I knew how to plug into the system, he said, "I've never even met you before, but you obviously know what you're talking about. So is there anything else I need to do?" Fortunately, at this point, they'd already done everything they needed to do, but that's how it's supposed to work. So Ray, what's your long-term goals with these programs?
Well, if we are successful, which it looks like we're starting to be with the awareness level program, my director has said that he'll allow us to pursue putting together an operations level course. I don't know that we'll ever get to the level that you have with live animals and the facilities that you have, but what we'd like to do is go on and build perhaps an 8-hour course using mannequins and starting to put a tool cache together and letting them start to see hands-on how this stuff works. I think it would be great. In the fire service, we kind of recognize that if you can't get it done in a day, it's going to be hard to get an audience to come for more than one day. And your class was awesome, but your class also takes a lot of effort. So we're hoping that if the awareness flies, then we can get an 8-hour class together and maybe do a little bit of classroom in the morning, but do the majority of the day, let them put hands on tools and practice things with mannequins so we can all be safe, but perhaps do a little bit better job when the rubber meets the road.
The mannequins that he's talking about, Glenn, are the ones that I actually import from Resquip over in the UK, and they are about as close in weight and balance and the way they move to a live horse as you can get. They're not cheap, but we found them to be very effective for doing this kind of training, because you want the mannequin to weighs about almost 500 pounds. You want it to weigh enough that when a firefighter goes to move it, he finds out that it's not a 200-pound human. It weighs more than that. It's more difficult than that. And it moves in ways that humans don't move. They got really long necks and heads. You don't want to drag their head. You don't want to drag their eye. You don't want to put something around their foot. And as I tell the firefighters, they can kick you from their butthole all the way around to their mouth. So if you stay out of those zones on a down horse, that'll keep you safer. So it's
the man. I have a question. It's a dumb question, but that's what I'm hired for. So you're importing full size, full weight horses from England. Are they shipping them whole, or is it like IKEA and you get the pictures directions when it gets there and you have to put it all together?
You get the picture directions and it's in a box about 3 feet wide, 4 feet tall, and 8 feet long. So believe it or not, they're able to fit a horse-sized thing into something that small.
But, okay, and the first time you put it together, it takes you like 6 hours, because of the IKEA directions? With the little...
It takes you about 2 hours.
Oh, okay.
We actually have 8 of those that we've imported to the United States so far. I think there's 80-something of them out there in the world, various places, but we have 8 of them in the United States so far.
Very good. Well, Ray, tell us, is there a website. It's probably too complicated here to put it on, to just say it on the air, but we will put a link to it on our Facebook page and in our show notes as well for the Illinois Fire Service Institute, or you can just Google that and you'll find the website. We really appreciate you joining us today, and you have an uneventful holiday season.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you giving me the chance to share what we're doing.
Very good. Well, Merry
really
Christmas,
proud of Ray. Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
With first responders, that's how I always say it. Have an uneventful holiday season, because for them, that's the perfect holiday season, uneventful.
That would be the perfect holiday season. You're right.
Yep.
I'm not sure that's going to happen, since there's lots of snow and ice up there.
Yeah, I know. He probably deals with a lot more cows, actually, than horses, because they have huge cattle farms up there.
They do. I mean, when you're driving around Illinois, the few times that I've been up there, he's right. There is the state of Chicago, and then there's the rest of the state, and it's amazing. You're driving out there, and you see nothing but cattle and horses and horses and cattle and horses and cattle.
That's it. That is truly it. I've driven through it a few times going to Chicago, and you know, it's amazing because you're just in the middle of nowhere for 5 hours, and then all of a sudden there's this big city right in front of you. So it's
a pretty good indicator. When I did that training with the veterinarians, there was like 40 veterinarians in the room, and of course, those are the ones that were able to make the time to come to the training, and most of them were in practices of two or more veterinarians, and they were, you know, they were just a small percentage of the equine veterinarians that are up there. So then you would have your cattle veterinarians, which obviously are intimately involved with the dairy business as well as the beef industry. So you start realizing that's hundreds of people that you've got to reach out to just in that one state to even get them some basic information about technical large animal emergency rescue. Anyway, that's what we do at TLAER.org.
And we appreciate TLEAR.org being here at once a month. We're going to take a break for our song right now. And I thought you just said that you were down visiting your parents at the farm in Tennessee. So I thought we would play a little music from Chancey Neal, who is out of Nashville, Tennessee, and is a barrel racer out of Nashville. And she has a great little song called Girl with a Guitar. We'll be right back after that with more on Emergency Rescue Day here on Horses in the Morning.
Miles from home. It's a scary thing, striking out on your own. I got a hurt from mama, still on my mind. But daddy's little girl, I'm doing fine. Tears in my eyes, a smile on my face. Rest of my life starts today. I'm just a girl with a guitar. Asking the world to take me far. I got a big dream and a red car and a fire down in my throat. Taking my chances, not knowing where I'm going. Hoping and praying there's one more lucky star. But we're on the guitar. I left the boy I love with a song. I sing it late at night when I'm alone. It break my daddy's heart, he only knew. How many doors this town will spin on you? This road is long, and it sure is straight. Step by step, finding my way. Girl with the guitar, asking the Lord to take me far. I got a big dream and a rap this morning, a fire down in my soul. One more lucky star, the girl with the guitar. good in love. Keep me coming, oh. Why is it good if it's just gone? Asking for it to take me far. I got a big dream and I ask for it about it. And let's go, yeah. Thinking I dance with the moon of tomorrow. Oh, hoping and praying that there's one more lucky star.
Well, that was Girl with a Guitar by Chancey Neal. She is from Nashville, Tennessee. You can search for her. Best place to find her is either on iTunes. Just search her on iTunes. You can buy all her music there. Or also, you can find her on Facebook. She posts all her dates. She does a lot of shows around the area in Tennessee. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenda Geek here with Dr. G on Emergency Preparedness Day here on Horses in the Morning. Of course, Coach Jen is in the producer chair as usual. We are brought to you today by TLAER.org, TLAER.org. And Dr. G, we're also brought to you by Large Rescue Glides. Tell us about those.
Large Rescue Glides are the most useful equipment used to safely and easily move large animals, and especially horses, when they're down. When they're sick, they are injured, severely lame, or they need to be transported to definitive veterinary treatment. They are the staple of TLAER teams at the racetrack, at the rodeo, eventing. You might have seen some of the large animal ambulances that use them, and of course, veterinary clinics the world over. And it's amazing, as I travel the world, I'm starting to see more and more of them. They're durable, they're easy to clean, they come with all the accessories required to safely restrain a psychiatric patient, which is what a horse really is, down on it. And what I always tell people is ask your veterinarian. Maybe a small private veterinarian might not own one, but I will tell you that if you have a large horse practice that you take your horses to, they should have one. It's the only safe way to move your horse out of the rain and the dark of the pasture, up to the barn or off of a trail accident, loaded onto a trailer for transport to a veterinary clinic for definitive care. You cannot do that in any other safe manner. So contact Ben at 864-270-1344, or you can visit his website at rescueglides.com, or you can email him at Ben McCracken, BenMCCracken, at rescueglides.com.
Thank you, Dr. G. It looks like Eric is ready.
Good morning, Eric Thompson. Eric Thompson lives in Kansas, which is way above the aforementioned freeze line that I was talking about. Last time I actually saw
not
Eric
far enough south.
Years ago. It's not far enough south. Last time I saw him was up in Kansas, and we were attending a conference together, and I said, hey, I'd really like to go to Starbucks, and he cranked his truck. It had one of those cool little heater things on it that keeps his truck warm so it'll actually crank, and he drove me down to Starbucks, and I had to go, Glenn, it was about 40 feet from the truck door to the Starbucks door, and I almost froze to death.
You know, that's when you know you are a hardcore Starbucks follower, when you walk in minus 14 degree wind chills to go get a cup of coffee. You know, we try to keep things interesting in the Kansas City area.
Eric has been doing large animal rescue since long before it was cool, and I'm going to let you tell a little bit more about yourself, but currently he also runs the Kansas EERU, which is the Emergency Response for Situations for all kinds of livestock and horses, whether they're stuck in mud and ice or disasters that are local. They also get called out to national disasters to assist with those kind of things. So I never know where this man is. He is all over the country. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Eric?
Well, yes, and I am running amok across the country this week, and my primary job is Director of Disaster Response for Code 3 Associates, which is the national animal response team. And then in Kansas City, back in 2004, I started the Emergency Equine Response Unit. Everybody knows of EERU. And it's based to serve most of the local Kansas City area, Kansas, Missouri. But we do training, awareness level training, and light operations all over the country in support of folks then going on to more technical trainings like yours, Rebecca. We started back in 2004 after a series of incidents when I was a police officer where we had overturned trailers or we had cows stuck in the mud or horses in distress. And at that time, we had no knowledge and technology in my area. And I sought out classes with Rebecca and a friendship was formed and education was shared. And oh my God, it's been almost 10 years later. Where's time gone? And I'm a little grayer, wiser, and pop a few more ibuprofen after a rescue or recovery. But it's been very successful, and we are tied into a lot of the first responder system. So we can actually provide that care on scene for large animals that wasn't there 10 years ago.
How cool is that, Glenn? Do we get some cool people on here or what? And did you hear the part about being a retired police officer? You know, that whole part about guns and men? Anyway, so I get up with that.
Well, you know, and that bodes me well when I go to teach it and I tell the cops, they said, listen, you can't pit maneuver a horse. Stop chasing it down the highway with your siren on.
And I can't tell you how many times we have had news stories where that's exactly what happened. And it's not just one cruiser. There's like 10 cruisers with their lights and sirens on hoping to stop the horse.
That's right. Yeah. And someday they actually get it over. You bet. I want to see the dash cam when it actually works.
Yeah, well, there's several really funny, well, sadly funny, like ironically funny stories of that where the horse is running down the middle line and the cop is chasing him from behind and the horse keeps looking behind him like, oh my God, it's still there. It's still there. And it's like, dude, just turn your sirens off and slow down and the horse would stop. But like you said, Glenn, are you starting to see, for 6 months we've been doing this show, and are you starting to see a theme here? It's not about the horse. The horse does what the horse is going to do because it's a horse. It doesn't think about it. But it's the human response. It's the human way that we interact with them that gets us in trouble or makes us successful. And understanding those human components, just like that. I mean, I always tell people in my classes, if I find your skull 2,000 years from now, I'm going to say you were an omnivore. I'm going to say you ate meat because of your teeth. It doesn't matter if you're a vegan or a vegetarian. I'm telling you, your skull tells me that you are going to react like a predator. And that predatory instinct is what gets us in trouble when we do things like chase horses and all those things. Anyway, go ahead, Eric. Tell us a little bit about what you guys have been up to lately.
This year hasn't been too busy as last year. Last year we had a drought in Kansas and we did a lot of mud work and with cattle trying to get out into small ponds and being stuck. This year we've had, unfortunately, some trailer accidents that we've had to work in the Kansas City area. And then, of course, we are in a prime location for ice accidents or ice-related accidents on ponds as we get these hard swings where we're in the 20s for highs for 2 weeks, but then we'll have several days of 60-degree weather that really makes the ice fragile and thin in spots. And inevitably, every year, we are called out to either help with a rescue or recovery, unfortunately, of an accident where a horse has gone through the ice or a large animal has gone through the ice. And here recently, the latest accident involved 3 yearlings in the Kansas City metro area, and they had gotten out on the ice, and the owner had actually been breaking ice on the pond. The ice was probably 4 inches thick in some places, but unfortunately, when you put almost a ton of weight in one area, the ice moves and it creaks, and the construction of ice becomes weak, and it only takes a small fraction of the ice for just a few seconds for that ice to break up, and it becomes a dangerous situation, and the pond was 30 feet deep, so there wasn't an option of standing once the horses went through. So we were called to assist with the recovery, which we do to help bring closure to the horse owners, because obviously this is never an intention, and everybody doesn't always foresee the possible accidents But we try to bring closure, so there's proper burial of the animal, and they don't have to wait till spring thaw for an unfortunate viewing of the bodies as they decayed over the winter.
Yep. Wow. Glenn, this is something that Eric brought to my attention last week when this occurred, and I actually was so upset about it, I did a blog, because it's so frustrating. You know it's got to be horrifying to the owners, and of course, once I put that blog up, there's been lots of comments from people who say, you know, it happened to me, it's happened to my neighbors. Obviously, this is something that happens quite often, and it's very unfortunate. And the frustrating part, as Eric mentioned, is it's so preventable. Putting a fence around your ponds prevents them from going in the mud. It prevents them from going in the ice. If you just have to water your animals in a pond, surely you can fence off a small section that they can get to, and then they don't take the chance of going out on the ice. So it keeps our rescuers safe, too, because they don't have to go out on the ice to try to catch or get the animal that dogs are famous for it, trying to get the animals out of the situation. Have you guys had to do a lot of dog rescues, Eric?
No, not too bad. You know, we've had a great response and a great partnership with our first responders, where we do a lot of ice education for both small and large animals. And in that case, everybody in our area has done real well preparing on how to deal with small animal incidents. Unfortunately, when the small animal incidents seem to bring on more of the human aspect, because the owner will risk their lives to go out and try to save their pets. And we find that a lot of times the human rescue then prompts the animal rescue as they go out. But we see it every once in a while. You know, luckily enough, we're not dealing with large amounts of weight there. It only lasts for maybe 2 weeks when we've got really thin ice, when it's only 1 or 2 inches. But right now we're in season where it's about 4 inches thick, and the small animals haven't been a factor right now.
Tell us a little bit about the training that you do. I know, Glenn, you need to know that Eric provides the only course that I know of specifically dealing with large animals and surface ice rescue situations.
Yeah, I developed a large animal ice rescue class about 3 years ago after we had just multiple incidents, unfortunately, with a boarding stable that was poorly run. It is now closed. But we would literally be called out 4 or 5 times a season because horses had gone through the ice. And unfortunately, accidents had occurred in the recovery or in the rescues when first responders went, and they were having a hard time working on the ice sheet, trying to contain the animal in one space so straps could be run. And everything that we taught them on land-based rescues was not applicable when the animal's thrashing around the ice and trying to keep them safe on the ice sheet. Because even in proper rescue gear, if you've got proper dry suits on and proper flotation devices on and helmets, it only takes one front strike of that horse trying to get out on its own that catches a life preserver or a life vest, and it drags the rescue underneath. So we've had to develop safety systems, use of boogie boards, safety lines that are tethered 90 degrees away from the animal instead of in front of the animal. We've had to come up with ways to protect the animal from ice chips as we cut and saw through the ice and trying to keep them calm.
So, unfortunately,
the training came. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask you, so how do you get them out? You got a horse stuck in the middle. They're never at the edge. So you got a horse stuck, you know, somewhere, you know, deep into the pond. How do you get them out?
Ideally, we take 2 chainsaws and we cut a path out for them.
Speak on, brother. Speak on.
You know, we try to go, you know, let's work smarter, not harder. And these guys the perception was at first, don't use a saw. It's too loud. It's going to scare the animal. And they would start to hack at it with an axe, which it's an impossibility, and it's not efficient. And it causes a lot of ice chips. It takes a long time. It's just as scary to the animal to see an axe being swung by its tail.
Yeah, right.
So we can use part of the glide, the slip sheet, to provide a flexible barrier around the horse. We bring in 2 chainsaws, and we chainsaw as fast as we can to shore about 4 feet wide, or 3 feet wide, and we'll slide the ice sheets underneath the portions that we're walking on or cutting around, and then lead the animal out. And then all we have to do is make sure we're stabilizing that animal for the few minutes that we're cutting. We're not having to run straps. We're able to hopefully, and this is the only time that I've ever told a first responder, if you can throw a lead rope around his neck, go ahead, but don't pull on it. Just hold him to the ice sheet so he's not swimming away from you.
Yep.
And hopefully we can then get an emergency halter on to lead him out. And that has been our most successful option, is just to stabilize the animal in the ice until we can get the ice sheet cut. On the rare occasion that we've had to do an actual lift out, if the horse is swimming, it becomes very difficult, and you have to hold the animal to one side of the ice sheet, and you have to float your straps underneath it. We have found that side pulls out of the ice have been much more successful, because we're able to put the slip sheet of the glide in to provide edge protection, and when you're pulling to the side, you obviously have more mass to hit that glide, and it disperses the pressure along the animal, and it doesn't create such a friction point, whereas if you try to
pull the first out of the ice, oh my God, we're talking about surface area and physics again, Glenn.
I know.
Oh my God.
I know. I should have paid attention in school.
It was never so much fun in high school. If they would have just talked about ice rescue and physics, it would have been a lot more fun.
Absolutely. Because a forward assist just creates too much pressure even though that's the natural tendency of the horse, if they're trying to come out of the ice, I really don't want their help at that point in time. They just need to relax.
All they're going to do is break through again. I mean, that's all they're going to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So the logistics of doing the haul and having enough space then for your teams to haul out becomes another issue. If you've got a short pond, you have to do a lot of change of direction with your ropes, because once you start hauling, you got to haul the full length of that ice, and then you have to haul up on shore. We don't stop hauling until we're in a contained space, and a contained space may be portable fencing, it may be livestock panels, it may be people creating a barrier, but the absolute, we don't want that horse to get back up and panic and go right back out on the ice and in the hole again. We developed these techniques. We actually work with some of our fire teams that are heavy rescue guys, and God bless them, you know, they loan me their dynamometer, and we start putting pressures on these rigs to make sure we're within safety zones, and we like to see what the pressures are when we hit that critical angle at the ice sheet, when we're putting the most pressure on that horse, because we obviously don't want to cause injury. So we've put a lot of thought and a lot of testing into some of these techniques. And then we focus back to the rescuers, because the ice sheets are compromised. They are sinking and moving as soon as they get on them, and they're out there with chainsaws, and it works as a buddy system. And so we spend about 8 hours in that training. Only two or three of it is in the classroom. The rest of it is, I want them out there in the cold and the ice and trying to work a rope on a potentially struggling animal that does not know that they're there to help. They're the big, scary yellow things. And these guys sometimes are inhibited because they may be in a rescue suit, like a Mustang suit or a Stearns eye suit, which are outstanding rescue suits for humans if you're doing bulk movements where you maybe just be throwing a ring or grabbing hold of somebody, but it limits your manual dexterity and your ability to tie knots or to do a emergency halter, because it has sewn-in gloves that are not a universal fit. If you have small hands, you are basically, we call it a Gumby suit, because you are making large Gumby-type movements. And we have found some of those rescuers that they will go buy dry suits just specifically for animal rescues in the ice, because there is some rigging that needs to be done on the animal. So we have found it to be beneficial.
I got to tell you, you guys have to have better chainsaws than we have, you know, to cut our trees, because I can't keep them running for 10 minutes to cut trees down. And you're cutting ice with all that water and everything. Mine would never work.
We do have heavy duty chainsaws, but they are the same chainsaws as the tree cutters. We've got heavy duty chains on them. And it's just one of those things that if it doesn't run, you're going to have to come up with plan B very quickly. And it is hard on the chainsaws. We've got two chainsaws that are designated for ice.
Yeah, I would imagine.
But you do.
So Glenn, you have not asked the obvious question, since I live not far enough south, but further south than Kansas. Has Rebecca ever actually been in the ice? No. And I have avoided it as long as I have known Eric. He has been trying to get me to come to his class, and actually
After this incident occurred last week, I told him that next year what I would like to do is get all of my assistant instructors together at his class in June or July and practice ice drinking. And he said, no, you can't do that. We're going to have to do it in January or February. And I said, but it's cold. And he said, it's ice rescue. So we are actually planning on doing that. And we're probably going to have a special class just for people who have had operations level TLAR training and or are assistant instructors with me sometime next year with Eric, because I'm so impressed what he's doing. And the next time I update my TLAR textbook, I'm going to be having Eric write a chapter in it about ice rescue, which he doesn't know until I just told him just now.
Okay. Well, and she has no excuse for not getting in the ice, because I have a dry suit that she will be able to fit into, and I have a helmet, and so, you know, there's no
wait a minute. What was that about? She'll be able to fit into? What are you saying? Is that
well, let's just say you're the tallest co-host I have. We'll just put it that way.
That's a good way to put that, Glenn. So
y'all are smart about how to handle women.
Well, you are. I mean, that is a fact. You are the tallest one. All my other co-hosts are like 5'2", and then you show up.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Well, Eric, is there a website for you guys?
There, if you can see our training, you can go to emergencyequinereresponseunit.org, and the classes are listed there. You can also see what's happening with the team. We try to update that as we go out and as we do trainings. EERU also advertises their training on the Code 3 websites, and you can see that at code3associates.org. And just go under the training tab, and our technical large animal training is listed also on their site.
Perfect.
And right now, I don't have any ice schedule or ice classes scheduled. Usually here in the Kansas City area, we will schedule them for February, and that way we're through the holidays and we're out of the bitter cold temperatures. January, when it gets to be 14 below, it's not fair to keep people out there 6 hours on the ice. So by the time February comes around, we're at least in the high 20s, low 30s to go play on the ice, and that's pretty comfortable.
Oh, my God, I'm going to die.
You know what? It's okay. They'll build a campfire for you right out there on the ice. It'll be fine.
Campfire on the ice, that sounds
good. That's
really
great. Cool. Yeah, it'll be fine.
Yeah,
it'll be good.
Eric, I really appreciate you coming on the show this morning. I appreciate your expertise, and I think as a horse community, all of us appreciate what you're trying to do with your community. I know that some of your jobs doing the recoveries for animals that have gone through the ice are awful, but I think that is a huge service to your community, and obviously we greatly appreciate it and want to thank you for all the things that you do within your community and your leadership in the TLAR world. So thank you for coming on the show this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much for spreading the word about fencing around the ponds. I think it will help out a lot of people in the future.
Awesome. Well, Glenn, what's coming up in future shows?
Well, that's a good question. What we've been doing this. Has it really been 6 months?
Yes, it's been 6 months.
Wow, doesn't seem like that. Time's flying.
I know. And I haven't even killed anybody yet.
Well, and you haven't run out of things to talk about yet.
Death doctor, whatever. What was that? Angel of something? She said
Angel of Doom.
Yeah.
No. You are the ghost of Christmases yet to come.
That's what it was. That, you know, you are really good at putting a spin on something. That's much better. Let's just hope that future Christmases, if we still have one more Christmas and a couple more days, let's hope that for future Christmases, people won't be having to hold hands and standing there watching their barn that's burned to the ground, or getting a horse out of something, or catching their horses running down the ridge.
Glenn and I, as a Christmas season tradition, watch at least a dozen different versions of the Charles Dickens novel.
Christmas Carol.
And the ghost of Christmas is yet to come is always the Grim Reaper, but it's ghost of Christmases that may be. It's not guaranteed. So that's what this is all about. This is what could be. You have the ability to change it. That's the whole point here.
Very well said. Very well said. Well, Jen,
that's very well said. I hope that people will will look out in their pastures as they are listening to the show and think, what could I do to make my place a little safer for my horses? We always think about nails sticking out of boards and those kind of things, and that's legitimate, but there's a lot of other more obvious things. Get some safety person to come out and take a look around your site. That would be a huge Christmas gift to yourself and to your horses, is to get someone that's an expert, a local firefighter, just to come take a look around your place. You know, Glenn, part of our problem sometimes is that we look at it every day. So
yep.
We assume that we've done the best we can.
Yep.
But having someone that's an outsider look at it and that's willing to actually tell you what you might not want to hear may be more useful for them. So find somebody in your local community. That firefighters love to do those things. They don't want to be holding your hand and patting you on the head while you're watching your barn burn to the ground. They want to be there early. They want to be able to tell you the things that you can do to prevent these kinds of problems. In all of our communities, we've come so far with preventing house fires. So few people these days die in house fires. But the number of animals that die in barn fires and structure fires is just horrific. It's hundreds of thousands of animals. If you think about the number of poultry farms and pig farms that burned, there was one recently. There was a picture of a pig who was in a fire and his back caught on fire, and he was actually running around screaming with his back on fire. How awful is that? So our job is, we eat them. So our job is to decide that if we're going to eat them, we're going to, first of all, humanely kill them and provide a facility for them that will keep them safe. And that is our job. It is, to me, ethically, morally, legally, financially, it is our responsibility. If we're going to take on animals, that we should take on that responsibility for our animals.
Now tell us to get a plug in quick here for the book. Do they still have time to order it for Christmas, or are we getting a little late now?
I bet you Amazon.com can still get it to you if you ordered it today. The Technical Large Animal Emergency Rescue Textbook is available online. The easiest thing to do is Google it. I always tell people, look on Amazon or some of those other kinds of online booksellers. They sort of change the prices on a regular basis, and of course you also have to take into account shipping, but it's somewhere between $120 and $150 depending on where you live and how much snow the postman has to get through to get it to your door. But it is, people say, well, I'm not going to do these kind of things, and I tell them, well, maybe a good Christmas present for your veterinarian or for your local fire department, if you want them to come and do a good job at your facility, is to buy them a book, so that they know some of the solutions to these problems. And worst case scenario, they can grab the book as they're going out the door and say, oh my goodness, we do have a large animal emergency rescue. What are we going to do?
Very good. And you can find that at Amazon. And I want to remind everybody, too, just a couple things here before we wrap up the show. We'll be back here live tomorrow morning. Jennifer, and I will be here. We'll be playing the voicemails that people have left for us and all our listeners have done, some singing ones, some regular ones, some fun ones. So if you want to leave yours, you can still have today to do it, 859-474-0261. You also have time to get your really bad ads in, and Jennifer is going to tell us what the prizes are for this week.
On the prize table this week from HorseGroomingSolutions.com, a grooming coat filled with products valued at over $100. When you need gentle, effective, economical products for your daily or show grooming needs, look no further than the Horse Grooming Solution brands that you have come to know and love. Healthy Hair Care, voted number one horse health brand by consumers, Silverado Show Grooming, and Old Timers Equine. You can find them all at your local tack and feed supplier, or you can go online to HorseGroomingSolutions.com. And on the opposite side of the table, a gift pack from Dr. Rose's. Dr. Rose's Remedies Skin Treatment at Salve and Spray are 100% all-natural products. They are anti-inflammatory, antibacterial, antiviral, and antifungal. Dr. Rose's are made with all human-grade ingredients and are safe and effective treatment for scratches, abrasions, cuts, and scrapes on your accident-prone horse. And they make great stocking stuffers. Ask for Dr. Roses at your local tack and feed supplier, or you can go online to drrosesremedies.com.
Thank you, Jennifer. And, of course, you can send your ads in to jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. Put really bad ads in the subject line. Copy the whole Craigslist ad, pictures and all. Paste it in the email. Do not send us a link. because 99% of the time, by the time we get to them, the link is already dead. So just copy the whole ad and paste it in the email. We want to see you have the opportunity to win. Do you realize, Dr. G, that between yesterday's Wheel of Trivia and what we're giving away tomorrow, we'll have given away over $600 worth of prizes this week. We certainly give away more than anybody else, I can tell you that. So over $600 worth of prizes right in time for the holidays. Dr. G, give out your website again.
It is TLAER.org, and I try to update it as regularly as possible with our schedule of events. We've already scheduled quite a few trainings for 2014, so I'll be all over the East Coast from Maine south to Florida, and looks like I may be doing some courses out west as well next year. So please go to the website, and if you need to get a hold of me individually, my email is delphiacres@hotmail.com, or you can look for my links on the website.
Very good. Thank you, Dr. G. Well, Dr. G is here every third Thursday of the month with her episode. We look forward to them. You can find the links for all of today's guests on the show, and you can go find those at horsesinthemorning.com. You can follow the Horses in the Morning on the Facebook or just by searching for Horses in the Morning. And also, we have a Twitter account. It's Horse Radio. And if you miss the live show, you can listen to all the recorded versions either online at horsesinthemorning.com or on our app. Just search for Horse Radio Network at the iOS or Android App Store. It's the easiest way to listen to the show. Everybody, on behalf of Dr. G and Coach Jen, be safe out there this holiday season. Please wear your helmets and, make sure that everything is fenced in. Fence in everything. Just do not let the horses go anywhere. Just fence it all.
That's right. That's really what it comes down to. Fence it and fence it off and fence them in.
Like we need to come up with a little tagline.
Are you fenced in, Glenn?
Yeah, we need to come up with a little tagline. Fence them off, fence them in, something. We need a little tagline. We'll have to work on a bumper sticker. We need a bumper sticker.
Does it work for husbands? Does it work for husbands?
Jennifer's try.
I bet you it would if you use electric.
And on that note, have a great day, everyone. We'll talk to you again tomorrow morning. I'm trying to find the closing music. Where'd you put it, Jennifer? It's gone. Oh, there it is. We'll see you. See you, Dr. G.
Thank you, Glenn. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Dr. G. Happy New Year.
Happy holidays, Dr. G.
You too, sweetie.